I'm not a knife. Mar says in Masechet Sukkah that whether or not you have to learn in the Sukkah depends on what sugya you're learning. So if you're learning a fairly easy sugya, it doesn't need so much, you know, rangatan, so much thinking, so much deep thought. So you should stay in the Sukkah. Why not? It's in the Sukkah. It's just in the Sukkah. When a person is breaking his head with sugya, I don't know, let's look at an example. I'm going to give an example of a sugya you have to really break a feast off on a salt. You guys having a good time with this, no? At least I keep my word. I told you that a bowl shall tire. We're going to have some fun this year. Come on, I told you. So a person's learning a hard sugya. It's hard to sit in the sukkah. You know, you need to walk around a little bit, to get a little fresh air a little bit. You need to, you know, to think clearly a little bit. So like a shtickle bit star, put them in a sukkah, learn such a riot, such a hard sugya, let them walk outside the sukkah. So Mustafa, you know, saying she has the last couple of days, these were hard sugyas. I couldn't stay in one place. The blood was just, the adrenaline was going so strong, I would have like exploded. So I had to like walk around and let off steam a little bit. Now relax a little bit, a little different chid, a little drush, a little different sirus, a little different chizuk. We can sit down, we can relax. But the emphasis is really the other way around. The things we're going to talk about now are really, everything is about Omdim Mirushalayim. Chizach Lelosofik is where it's at also. We've quoted in the past from the Kotzka, no? Anyway, this is like free association, just in case you think regular shiur is not, so this is a different drush of the shiur, free association. So we've quoted in the past from the Kotzka that right before the Kir Shofar, how to get into the right spirit for the Kir Shofar. So what does the Chassidish Rebbe do right before the Kir Shofar? So in Kotzk was known as the place of Emes. It was Isha Emes, par excellence. What does a person do? You want to get to the real Emes, you want to come as close to Kadosh Baruch Hu as you possibly can get to in this world right before the Kir Shofar. In Kotz, he would take out a ketzos and he would look for the hardest ketzos. He would learn, I just said that. He would read to a ketzos, he'd learn up a ketzos. He'd run guitar and a ketzos, and a ketzos, and a ketzos, and a sivus, kudus asveikis, tfisa, mominis, muchsuch, eskis markama. You really, really get into it. You see, the Dvar Hashem just penetrates your very soul. No, it's fine. I can get up and blow shofar. So everything we've been talking about the last couple of days is to get us to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Well, it's a few days before Rosh Hashanah, so we have to talk a little bit more direct as well. So about things that touch on the very essence of the days upon us. I remember when I was in Talmud here many, many moons ago. So I took a class. I guess it's not called Bible. It was Chumash. It was called Bible. And I had to write a paper about to compare. I was like on a later Mefarsh, like a more contemporary Mefarsh. So I had to write a paper to compare like the style of Shimshon Fal Hirsch and Ksava Kamoa, you know, about how they approach Sugi X, Y, Z, and something in Chumash. This one goes back 35 years, give or take. Probably a little more giving than taking. And I don't remember, I have no idea what the protum of the paper, but I remember that one of the Yusaidis I remember which Mefarsh it was about. One of the two. So I used the model to try to show how you can understand a lot about Tamei Mitzvahs when you know the details of the mitzvahs themselves. I mean, Tamei Mitzvahs are not just like you sit around and you philosophize about certain mitzvahs. I'd like to say a beautiful shiur about the Kir Shofar. Let me tell you the 16 different reasons why I blow shofar. Tamei Mitzvahs doesn't start like that. Tamei Mitzvahs starts first to learn 35 lamas of Rosh Hashanah. when you understand all the intricacies of Shvarim Truas and everything about the mitzvah of Kishav in terms of the world of Halacha, and then you have a fighting chance to try to understand the Amkas and Dvarim, to understand what's behind the Kishav. And I was like, one of the theories. I didn't, get a PhD in Bible studies for that, but that was like one of the theories that I remember was developed. So when we come to Rosh Hashanah, we want to get a little bit of an understanding of what we're supposed to be doing in Rosh Hashanah, and perhaps more important, what we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to be thinking and feeling in Rosh Hashanah. So we can't approach this topic just in a vacuum. We have to look a little bit into the world of Halacha and to see, what are we supposed to be focusing on? What's supposed to be happening in Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is the most mysterious of all the Yom Tov. There is no question about it. It is the most mysterious of all the Yom Tov. I'm not talking about, Lag BaOmer and Tu Bishvat and things. I'm talking about, I'm not minimizing the days, not saying Tachan, but I'm talking about, the Yom Tov Deraisa. It is the most mysterious by far of all the Yom Tov. Because in the Teshuvah B'Chsav itself, we have absolutely no clue what it's all about. Not a clue. Pesach, it's very obvious why we're celebrating Pesach. And Sukkot, the Torah tells us why we're sitting in the Sukkot. Yom Kippur, the Mechilas Havainis. Shavuos is a little bit less clear, but you don't have to go that. You don't have to rocket science to do some math back to Parshas Yisrael and figure out B'chodesh Hashlisha, the Tzeis B'Rav Zohar Yitzrayim. He had a few days, and all of a sudden, hey, Baruch Hu, where we are for the celebration of Zman Matan Torah Seinu, give or take a day or so, depending on what you think about Zman Matan Torah Seinu. Rosh Hashanah doesn't correspond to anything. Torah says, what are we supposed to be doing? Why are we doing what we're doing? And the one thing that the Torah says to do in Rosh Hashanah, besides being Shavuos V'Malacha, is highly unclear what exactly that is and what it's supposed to accomplish, because that's mitzvah tkiyah shofar. So what's the essence of Rosh Hashanah? So I'm not the first person to pose this question. The Ramban posed this question as opening lines of the drasha for Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi gave a famous drasha for Rosh Hashanah, those who are interested in reading it. If you read it just word for word and kind of pace it, it's verbatim, I think these are the notes of the Ramban that he gave his drasha one year in Rosh Hashanah. So if you just read it out, it was approximately 3 to 3.5 hour drasha, unless he spoke, they put him on very, very fast speed. So it was a very, fairly long drasha for Rosh Hashanah. I probably would be asked to find an assistant rabbi for the following year if I would give such a long drasha for Rosh Hashanah. By 12 minutes, I can already hear starting to hear murmurings of Lamed Tzech and Nekarach. Last year, I took the liberty of speaking for 13 minutes because we're Shabbos, so I had a few extra seconds to shave off Tkir Shaifa. Because it was all in Shul anyway last year. Not 3 people in my mini. The Ramban already poses this challenge. Like, my high, what is going on? What is this? Mazeh? What is this Rosh Hashanah all about? So let's see if we can just try to give Mom, it's just a little bit of fear and yes, just what the Rosh Hashanah are. And again, we're going to look in the world of Halacha to see what the Rosh Hashanah are. The Mishnah at the end of Masechet Rosh Hashanah speaks about two different mitzvahs that we perform in Rosh Hashanah. One is the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar, and one is the mitzvah of Davening Musaf. We daven Musaf all the time, every Shabbos and Yom Tov, but it's clear already from the Mishnayos that the mitzvah of Davening Musaf in Rosh Hashanah is much, much more significant than just a plain, simple old Musaf of every other Shabbos and Yom Tov in Rosh Chodesh. We have Mishnayis after Mishnayis after Mishnayis to talk about, to say the Dvarim. Chazal added this extra bunch of brachas to the Musaf. Going to most of the Mishnah that we follow the Halacha, the 9 brachas were only added to Musaf, were not added to Shachmas, Minchah, Meirav. Although there was an opinion in the Mishnah that says you have to daven all 9 brachas for each of the tefillas. So go tell that to the Malabat, don't make a deal. Let me speak 5 extra minutes, we won't pass like those Mishnah. So that would definitely add a significant time to davening. But the Lamaisin is something very, very special, very unique about the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. And of course, the uniqueness of the 3 brachas, machas, zecharis, and shofar. Where did this come from? What is this all about? Why are we saying machas, zecharis, and shofar in Rosh Hashanah? So there's a major machlokes in Rishonim. What is or is not the relationship between these two sugyas that appear in the end of Rosh Hashanah? The mitzvah of tkiyah shofar that makes up most of the 3rd perek, and machas, zecharis, and shofar that makes up a good chunk of the 4th perek. What, if anything, is the relation between these two? So Rashi, both Rashi and Chumash, Rashi in the Sefer Hashanah alludes to this idea as well a few places, that there was a very, very real connection between the two, and the connection is even true at the level of Deraisa. And Rashi has this famous shita that the recitation of the Malchis, the Chanes, and Shaifers is mamash achiv min haTorah. When the Gemara says the words Imru lefanim Malchis, Kodesh Baruch Hu speaking Imru lefanim Malchis, Imru lefanim Zichrones, Imru lefanim Shaifers, and the Gemara quotes Sukkim to this effect, so Rashi understood this to be mamash adin min haTorah. So you're doing two mitzvahs Deraisa and Rosh Hashanah. You're blowing shofar, Zichr Deraisa, Yom Shri Elohim. Then there's another mitzvah Deraisa learned out from Zichr and Shuva Mikra Kodesh and Yeshem Lakechem, a variety of psukim that the Gemara tacks on, Malchus and Rosh Hashanah too. But according to Rashi, they're definitely mitzvahs min haTorah. So the Ramban takes very, very strong issue with this Rashi. Ramban on Parashat of Chumash. And Parashat Emor says he claims Rashi is against the Gemara, against the Parashat Gemara at the end of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. But the Gemara tells us that if a person has two cities and he doesn't have a shofar, guy's in the middle of nowhere, he doesn't have a shofar, he doesn't have a daven, doesn't have a machzer, doesn't have a tefillah, nothing, there's no hope, he doesn't have a daven. And the two cities are out at home from one to another. So he's got to go, he's got a choice. Either goes to this city or to that city, one is a shofar, one is a chazan. So the Gemara says you go to the shofar. Why? What says, had deraisa, had derabanan. The shofar is deraisa, the chazan is only a derabanan. So the Ramban says, the Gemara says, the favorite, stop being Muslim, hearing Muslim is only a derabanan, a Rosh Hashanah. So all the Acharedim basically say the same part as Das Rashi, that what the Gemara means is that Musaf, independent of shofar, is taka a derabanan. If you don't have a shofar, so then davening Musaf is only a mitzvah derabanan, like any other Musaf, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, Yontif, etc. What Rashi meant was, if and when you're going to blow the shofar, then the Malachi Zechonis and Shofar become elevated to be a deraisa. So the Gemara is right, and Rashi and Chumash is right. The Gemara is right that if you have a choice between shofar and musaf, go for shofar, or shofar is independently a mitzvah deraisa. So whether or not you're going to daven musaf, you're going to chap a deraisa with shofar. Are you going to chap a deraisa with musaf? If you just go for musaf without shofar, you're not getting deraisa. So that's the Gemara says, ha deraisa, ha derabanan. So we have there's a hierarchy in halacha. You follow deraisa, over derabanan. Rashi says in Chumash that Malach is a Chumash is a deraisa. What Rashi means is, if and when you're going to be blowing shofar, by the way, the psukim that accompany the shofar become elevated to being a mitzvah deraisa. That's the Birah Dovid Rashi. What's Pshah? What kind of halacha is Pshah? What's the thing? Like Mamanashach. Does the Torah want us to say these psukim? Does the Torah not want us to say these psukim? If it's a separate independent mitzvah, so it's like mashal bada v'dayva. Let's say it's raining, so I can't sit in the sukkah, so I won't shake a lulav either. Mashugan. Or it's the first day of sukkah, it's on Shabbos, I'm not going to shake a lulav, so I won't sit in the sukkah either. Well, I don't do anything. If there are two separate independent mitzvahs on Rosh Hashanah, one is Yom Teruah, one is Zichron Teruah, so each one should be toughest min haTorah. So obviously, according to Rashi, it's not the Birah Dovid. Obviously, according to Rashi, the Malchus Zichron and Shofar are not integrally significant. They're not per se warranted by the Torah. The mitzvah arises only in the context of Tekir Shofar. So how do you understand that relationship? What's Pshat? So I've said this over many times in the past. Some Talmidim probably heard this from me in the past. It's the beer I heard B'shaita from one of my early Rebbeim in life, from Mordechai Marcus, Echatzak Livrocha, one of my high school Rebbeim, which just left there a year and a half ago. So he said over a beautiful beer at the time, we've said this over Tishrei time and Nisan time, because it's for both, where sometimes we find in halacha that the Torah requires of us not just to do a mitzvah, but to actually understand why we're doing that particular mitzvah. Most mitzvahs are in fact not like that. A person shakes a lulav, if you want to learn Sefer Chinuch and know some of the reasons behind lulav, you want to read Meir Nevuchim, you want to read Shem Shufal Hirsch, you want to read Ksava Kabbalah, you want to read the Rav, you want to read Rav Kook, you pick whatever Sefer Machshav and Hashkaf you want, whatever fits your taste, read a little bit about it, and get a little bit psyched up about it, and then shake the lulav. Like, great. And if you're a pretty dry, you know, just a Litvish guy, the stuff doesn't, you know, just come on. Give me an asterisk, that's okay, give me a lulav, that's okay, and cut the, you know, cut the rest of the stuff. Okay, great, you know, that's fine. You get to the mitzvah. The mitzvah tells lulav is the mitzvah tells lulav, that's it. But every once in a while, the Torah itself tells us that it's not enough just to do a ma'aseh mitzvah. The Torah requires of us to get a tfisa, to get an understanding as to why we're doing what we're doing. We find this idea by the Leil HaSeder, Koshel Omer Shlosh Dvar V'Pesach L'Yotzi De'Chavosai. So where the Rambam says that L'Yotzi De'Chavos Sipetis Mitzrayim, Tais and the Ram say that's not the Pshara L'Yotzi De'Chavosai. L'Yotzi De'Chavosai means that you didn't really fulfill Achilas Pesach properly. You didn't fulfill Achilas Matzah. You didn't fulfill Achilas Morer to the ultimate level. I ate the Matzah. What do you want? I ate the Matzah. The Matzah was Mehuter. It was unbelievable. It was burnt to the crisp. El Chum Rebbe Hidr. It's in Mamash of the Mahadran and Mahadran. It was Chabura Matzah Plus. It was $300 a bite. Every possible Hidr. You're right. But if you didn't think about why you're eating the Matzah, you didn't talk about eating the Matzah, you lost the Chelek of the Mitzvah. I didn't say, but you lost the Chelek when I started the Mitzvah. So Rav Aryeh suggested that that same relationship that we find by the Shlosh Mitzvah, with the Shlosh Mitzvah of the Leil HaSeder, we find the same relationship when it comes to the Kishef as well. That the Torah is telling us it is not enough just to blow shofar Rosh Hashanah. The blowing shofar must be accompanied by an understanding as to why we're doing what we're doing. And now the question becomes, why are we doing what we're doing? So Chazal didn't want to leave it up for guesswork. Chazal spelled it out for us.
So according to Malach,
it
should
only say
you should go to the place as davening as opposed to the shofar,
because
then you wonder, because the shofar
of Pelkas
explaining what you're doing, you said, is meaningless.
No, I didn't. I said you're Yotze, you're not Yotze Bishlamusa, but it's still you're Yotze Bitzadaraisa. If you go to the Musa without the shofar, then you get nothing Minatara. Nobody says that the Machsech Minatara is Ma'akid Minatara. Nobody says that. The same way that the Ran says that Koshla Omer Shlosh Dvarim L'Yotzei De'Chavosel doesn't mean Makim. It means L'Yotzei L'Chechila. It's the Ran like that. Against the Ran. So what are the reasons? So Chazal didn't want to leave it up to our imagination, so Chazal spelled it out for us. And therein lies the secret of the davening on Rosh Hashanah. And there are three things that we're supposed to be thinking about Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah has three themes to it. There are three motifs to Rosh Hashanah. And the three motifs are not great mysteries. There's the theme of Malchus Shemayim, there's the theme of Zichreinus, there's the theme of Shofars. So now that we know why we're supposed to be thinking what we're thinking, and we know what we're supposed to be thinking and talking about, let's see if we can learn to sugya a little bit of each one. How we can perfect a little bit Malchus Shemayim, what Zichreinus means to us, and what are some of the things we should have in mind during the Brach of Shofars. Because this is the key of marriage, this is the Dimin HaTorah of enhancing the Mitzvah Tekiyah Shofar. So Malchus Shemayim is obviously a tough sugya. Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim. Maybe we could share one nuance, one insight into Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim that maybe could help us out along the way. So I'll share with you, you're the first to hear this ha'ara. If you come to Rosh Hashanah, I'll probably speak about it at some point in Rosh Hashanah. This is a hot noon, right off the presses, because it just occurred a couple of weeks ago in my life. So, I think I mentioned Shira already last week. So, family trips are very good for a couple of reasons. First of all, they break up the routine a little bit. Second of all, they always give you a new drush, you know, new opportunity for drushes. When you see the world a little bit, there are some Rabbanim that, you know, starting already Sunday morning, you know, they're already looking around. So in the old days, the rabbi used to read the New York Times, you know. I don't think anyone reads the New York Times anymore. But the rabbi used to listen to the Times, and he'd listen to the news, and he'd look around and catch, you know, check in and talk to people and hear people, and to try to incorporate what you can put into your drasha. So I'm not as good as that. I don't start from Sunday morning doing that. I usually I don't read the New York Times, but I usually start. The joke goes that there are different rabbanim, you know, different stages in rabbanim. The early years of rabbanim, so already Sunday morning, you're ready to bring the drasha. As things go on, a little bit, a little bit later in life. So, you know, Thursday night becomes the drasha night. Then, as you get a little bit more experience, a little more busy in life, a little more tired in life. So then, you know, Friday night after the meal, you start this. Scrounging around looking for something. Then a little bit later on, you know, you wake up early Shabbos morning, you know, and when you're finally ready to retire, you know you're ready to retire when the drush begins to circulate by Uvnu Chayomer. Sometimes I find when you see things out of your Dalet Amos, so it gives you almost a little bit of a new insight. So I told you, I went with my wife to Lake George for a couple of days, a few weeks ago. So one of the days, we went to, I forgot what it's called already. We went to this place where there was a lot of water, not Lake George itself, a lot of water, a lot of running water, rivers, and rocks, and a raft ride, and the rapids. Maybe we were back in Moshe Kolo, back down the Delaware. It's a lot of water. And you stop and you look and you see. It's Maisa Bayre, Gavaldik. The basic theme of the day was water. So I remember thinking to myself, this is nice. It's very, very pretty. It's very beautiful. But the water that I'm seeing here is really a minuscule amount of the amount of water that exists in the world. I said, this is a river. This is not even the Hudson River. It's not the Amazon River. It's not the Mediterranean Sea. It's not the Pacific Ocean. Compared to the Pacific Ocean, this is a glorified bathtub. And I thought to think, I started to think to myself a little bit. And I said, I'm here, I'm 20 miles away from Lake George, and walking this beautiful Maisa Bayre, have a lot of water in the rocks, and they're very nice. And you see the Maisa Hashem. There must be billions and billions and billions of these scenes around the entire world. And I started to think to myself, that's why we don't go on vacation though, because my wife, once I stuff a lot of this. So I started to think to myself, so I have a kasha. It is gnawing at me the entire day. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu make this one? What is this accomplishment exactly in the world? What is the point of this world? So first I started to think to myself, I kept on playing back in my mind the Rambam Pesha Mishnayos, where the Rambam says that Kadosh Baruch Hu will sometimes build a building or something and it won't be used for anything important, and all of a sudden a tzaddik is going to come 100 years later and he's going to rest against the building, so the whole building was built just for that. So I wanted to make myself feel good a little bit, so I said, oh, must be, Kadosh Baruch Hu made all this water, so Rambam said, must be to come, I'll have a drash in Rosh Hashanah. And I felt that was a little bit too gaibedict, I can't say that publicly in Shul Hashanah, that doesn't sound right. So that's probably not the pshat. Maybe it is a pshat. So why did Kadosh Baruch Hu make this tremendous water? It's Tzorachim, okay, a lot of kashas. It's Tzorachim, go, fine. Day ended, finished the Zazam with the water. The next day, it was raining a little bit, so we had to come up with some indoor activity. So Baruch Hashem, I was able to come up with one, because the other one was a trip to Marshall's for the entire day. That was not up there, and the ball of Lake George was not my number one choice to go to, considering we had gone to that the night before. That was that activity. So Baruch Hashem. So I realized that on the way back, we're already driving back. This thing's called How Caverns. Anyone have been there? Caves, right? That's outside of Albany. It's very beautiful, right? Anyone there? No, I'm sorry.
It's like underground.
Underground, yeah, it's underground. And I called them up and they said, yeah, you could be, it's all indoors, doesn't matter. I said, if it's going to be pouring, it doesn't matter. If you have a hurricane outside, it doesn't matter. It's all 500 feet underground. I said, great. I said, this is the place to be. Of course, so did everybody else think this was the place to be, but I came up, Hashem, we were there. We come underground, and whereas the theme of the day before was water, water everywhere, drop the drink. I dropped the drink. There's water everywhere. Here was rocks. You're underground in the caves. It's a fascinating rock. And then the tour guide shows you this rock, Zoi rock, Zoi rock, and Zoi rock. And this is beautiful this, and this is from Sheshem Ebreishis, and this is from here. And they'll tell you it's a little bit more than Sheshem Ebreishis. Okay, whatever. This is awesome. They forgot how to tell time, but give it up anyway. Whatever. It's all good. And I'm listening, and the episode is very beautiful. I found it very, very inspiring. It's been there. It's you see how Kadosh Baruch Hu creates this bizarre thing. And I said to myself, wait a second. I said, how many of these caves exist in the world? There must be billions of them. Only one guy, a guy in upstate New York, figured to make a few dollars out of it. But as I started to think to myself, of course there were more of these caves. How do I know? Because the Sugi is an Erevin. Talk about a guy's kind of shvis in the cave. He goes one to one. So there must be caves in the world. So there are caves. So there must be billions of these caves, and each one of these caves got billions of rocks. And even the ones that are not, if you would make a hole and go into the middle of the ground, so you would, that's what you see, rock. So I thought to myself, okay, I understand, Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to create a rock here, a rock there, just to remind people that, he makes rocks. Billions of rocks, billions of caves, trillions of rocks. like it was the kasha of the day before, just magnified, just a thousand times more. So this was Noah Gabi. Thinking about these two kashas on the way back. My high with the water, my high with the rocks. What's pshat? What's pshat? So I think the answer to this question is the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Me'ilah. The Rambam, many of the Svarim Mishneh Torah, he takes the opportunity to give you a little bit of Divrei Chizuk and some Divrei Mutzer at the end of each one of the Svarim. He signs off each Sefer, not with the Dvar Halacha, with the Dvar Machshava. Not everyone does this, but for the most part he does this. And the Rambam is a good rabbi, a good darshan. He connects the drush to the theme of the Svarim, of the Sefer he's talking about. The Marshal, he finishes off Sefer Mado with something that's very, very relevant about Mado and Avon and Zman. Each Sefer he picks something that is some real piercing thought that gets to the heart and soul of what the halachas are all about. So the end of Me'ilah, the end of Sefer Avodah, so he wants to highlight the fact that the Torah gives us a mitzvah of Me'ilah. Me'ilah means that I can't take Dvar Kedusha lightly. That's what Me'ilah means. If something, a piece of wood belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, I can't just take it and use it for firewood. An animal belongs to the carbon. I can't just ride in the animal. There's an isumila. I have to treat the bark. When something chal shem Hashem on something, it requires us to take it with a little bit of a, you know, pachat. You take a step back. Kadosh Baruch belongs to Kadosh Baruch. It's not for personal use. So the Rambam says, Mashal of David, the Rambam says that just because a stick in a stone has the name of Kadosh Baruch imprinted on it, you have to treat it with the proper kavod. How much more so for the Dvar Hashem, you have to treat with the proper kavod. How much more so do you have to treat the mitzvahs with the proper kavod? Not to trample on them, not to take them lightly. Post may being moil the mitzvahs. What does it mean to take mitzvahs lightly, says the Rambam? So the Rambam says that there are two parts of Torah, the two parts of mitzvahs, the chukim and the mishpatim. The mishpatim, we basically understand, any thinking person realizes that the world cannot survive without mishpatim. I mean, we're learning about Basra. Remember the first sugya, we realized, even with the Dini HaTorah, we have to throw in Hefkebez and Hefkev once in a blue moon, you know, to make the world function. Imagine a world without any mishpatim. It'd be a total Hefkevelt. So everyone understands this. You need an Eser Ritzichen, you need Dinim of Mazik, you need Dinim of Geneva, Gezel. Okay, but they need Hezekri or not, that's up for discussion. Okay, but the Tvis of Akshel Lasofing, we can triple about that. But the basic Tzura of Mishpatim, everyone, you need Mishpatim. It's no great finish. Most people think, what are we Chukim for? Chukim by definition means people don't understand them. Imagine a world without Paradum. Imagine such a world. Imagine a world without Tyrus Mitzera. Imagine a world without Tzorah Mishtalech, without Kilia Kerem, without Bas V'Cholav. Imagine a world like that. It's not that hard to imagine such a world. 99% of humanity has such a world. And the world, for the most part, runs without those things. Says the Rambam, no, it doesn't. Says the Rambam, it doesn't. And I challenge Rambam, but it does. Rambam says, no, it doesn't. And if you believe that it does, then you're in violation of the Mitzvah Satera. Says the Rambam, what does it mean to be shomer something? Shomer means to give significance, to grant value to something. You shomer something that's worth something. Something that's cheap and inexpensive, you don't spend too much time watching. Like if somebody will walk away with this little bottle of water over here, 39 cents in Walgreens, I get another one. But if a person has some other, I'm not going to give an example of an expensive drink, but a person has something very, very expensive, so he's going to watch, he's going to hold on to it. Keep my, my precious jewels, I keep them safe. Stick them in the vault. To be shomer something means to give it value, and to give it significance. The Torah says in the same breath multiple times, Shmartem eschukosai v'esmishpatai. Shmiras achukim means that we have to have the mindset towards the mitzvah HaTorah that they are as choshev, the chukim are as choshev for the world, as the mishpatim. We don't understand it. We have no clue what that means. That is the mitzvah teirushmartem. That is all included. And the pasuk says, "Amarti v'echma v'rechayke v'meni." Shlomo HaMelech didn't understand Paraduma. Shlomo HaMelech didn't understand the intricacies of Paraduma. So none of us understand Paraduma. None of us understand Sabi Shalach. None of us understand Paris Mitzayra. None of us understand Kilayim. None of us understand Shatnez. That's right. Amarti Echma v'chayke v'meni. But the mitzvah Shemiras Achukim requires of us to look at the things in the world that we don't understand with the same reverence and respect as the things that we do understand. And the things that we do understand, we marvel at their beauty. We marvel at the wisdom. We marvel at the concepts of Mishpatim. It's an unbelievable thing. You know, because we take Mishpatim for granted, imagine a world without Mishpatim. You don't have to go that far to imagine a world without Mishpatim. Look at societies that aren't grounded in Mishpatim. Look what happens when Mishpatim breaks down. Ish Yisrael Chaim B'Loi. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us such an unbelievable bracha called Mishpatim. And in the same breath, we believe in Munah Shalem, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the tremendous bracha called Chukim. What enables us to make that jump? What enables us to have that Amunah that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the writer of the Mishpatim as well as the writer of the Chukim? That's Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim. Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is in a different plane than us. Kadosh Baruch Hu is in a different world than us. Kadosh Baruch Hu's understanding of things is not quantitative. It's not like, you know, like the Havda. You know, some guys in the Shira do a little better. One guy gets a 95, one guy gets a 93, one guy gets an 82, one guy gets a 78. You know, they're all in the same basic league. Some guys are a little smarter than others. Sometimes you have, you know, the Havdil. You know, you have in the major leagues. So you have, I'm going to date myself. Anytime I give a mashal from sports, it usually ends by 1975 or so. So just bear with me. You know, there are the Hank Aarons in the world. You know, there are the Willie Mayses. Don't challenge me for anyone past that. Kufa, Babe Ruth, my early days. I had a guy in my shul who old time. He passed away in the last couple of years. Old time for the Bronx. He used to tell me about. He used to watch DiMaggio. Back in Yankee Stadium for a nickel to go watch DiMaggio. He'd love to tell me that. Okay. Anyway, so they're the superstars. Then you have the guys who, they're batting 229. But they're not great, but you know, they're still on the bench, and you know, every once in a while, you know, every dog has his day. Once in a while he'll hit the winning run or something. So, you know, they're in the same parish, so they're in the same league. So I understand there are leagues in this world. There are darkness quantitatively, there are some better, some worse. Then you have, I think Zach will appreciate the marshal. Then you have PAL. Right? What's PAL? Police Athletic League of Bergenfield, which really my kids had the chutzpah to be on the same team as Zach for many, many years. You know, you wouldn't say that, Zach Rothenberg, when he was, 9 years old, Zach Rothenberg, he also plays baseball. You know, he's a struggle Willie Mays, it's close, He knows how to throw, he knows how to slide, you know, he can run the bases, they're there. All right, he hits a little bit further, it's a little less. Then they say, you realize there's a, I gave that mashal. I think I may have told this off the list. I don't remember. With my wife with the basketball story. It was, is this being taped yet? Okay, we'll talk about it. No, it's okay, it's fine. There were, when we had like some guy from the white basketball team, I forgot it was. I don't remember what the story was exactly.
Give the
bracha. Yeah, another. I forgot the whole, whatever it was. My wife was like said something. She quoted like some basketball player or something, and said that I'm sure like this guy could be, maybe they'd be like, good friends or something. I forgot what the exact marshal was. So I was trying very hard to explain to my wife that not everyone who, can shoot a free throw is in the same, league. So I gave the marshal PAL, but she didn't know who the basketball player was. I said, like our kids, they were great in their heyday, but like, they're not going to the majors. It's just not happening. So Havdil, Elaf, Alfe, Alafim, Vereer, Vavavos, Pama, Tebe, Shizmos, Tebe, Mamim, that Asana Kadosh Baruch. We're very smart. Some of us, you know, may have pulled off over 1,400 on the SATs. Some of us may be doing well on our LSATs. Some of us may be getting into medical. And we're slow. You know, we pride ourselves of being pretty smart. And then there are some people who are really, really smart. I mean, you got Einstein. He's pretty smart. And then there's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, come on. Like, get a life. That's what it means to be showing me the chukim and the mishpatim, to turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shalom. I do not have a clue as to how in the world and why in this world this bits of paradum exists. My version of a world could be without paradum. So Kodesh Baruch Hu very nicely and says to us, that's wonderful. Next time you create a world without paradum and see how it works. So we talk a little bit, you know, in a humorous tone, but that's how our approach of Kodesh Baruch Hu has to be. That complete and total recognition that we're not in the same league, we're not in the same ballpark. If that plays out with Chochmas HaTorah, plays out with Chochmas HaTeva as well. The Rambam of the end of Hilchos Teshuvah tells us that one of the ways of understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through the natural world, to be blown away by the Chochmah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I understand. Let's say, if I would be an ophthalmologist. So I can tell you from today till tomorrow, the human eye is lo yu'uman ki yasupar, and we understand why we need an eye. Chalili, you don't have an eye, and you can't see. Lo yu'uman ki yasupar, the godless. Someone will tell you they work in a research lab, and they look under the microscope, and they see a cell. No one else. They'll tell you, lo yu'uman ki yasupar, Kodesh Baruch Hu, wow, amazing. And we understand. I mean, I don't know too much about cells, but some people know a little more probably about it than me. But we all understand that it's an amazing thing, the fact that we're functioning, the fact that life exists. It's an unbelievable place. And we understand why we need our eyes and why we need our ears and why we need our ability to eat and to breathe. We understand that. Those are mishpatim. Those are obvious. And then we look around at the world and see, gee, by golly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this river in upstate New York. It's been doing the same thing for the last almost 6,000 years. The water keeps on going and going and going and coming back and going and going. And nobody has an idea why. Not a clue. Not a clue. And for that matter, do you understand? I understand why Kodesh Baruch Hu made planet Earth. I got there. That I could pretty obvious why we need planet Earth, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting here today. Anyone want to explain to me why Kodesh Baruch Hu made Venus? Anyone want to explain to me why Kodesh Baruch Hu made 5 trillion, gazillion, trillion, they don't even know the numbers of how many stars there are in the galaxies? Can someone explain to me, and would the world be so much significantly less if there wasn't 3 trillion stars somewhere out so many light years away that we'll never get to them anyway? Akasha? Akasha of the Rebbeinu Shalom. You're right. And what's the answer to Akasha of the Rebbeinu Shalom? Why did Rebbeinu Shalom make the waters and why did they make the rocks for? I have absolutely no clue. And that part of the world is Chok. Those are Chukim. And I have no less Amuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understanding in his wisdom that how to be this rock or this place and how caverns, some sheshes and vibrations. Why? Maybe it is for Sobolovsky to see it. I have no idea why. I have no idea why. And just the fact that it exists, it blows my mind. Because it takes an unbelievable chokhmah to create these things, and there has to be a reason. What it is, Amarti Echma Birchaikini Meni. That's Kavolta Baruch Hashemai. It's a total and complete subservience to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chochmah. He's the Melech, he's the King, and you're not even in the PAL League. There's a third area where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chochmah plays out. The same model, same line of reasoning, parts of it we understand, parts of it we don't. The three different areas that Lefini's Daiti, you can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chochmah the most. One we mentioned was the Chochmah Satoira. That's clear. That's Chazal's statement of Hayot Vama'ila, Vemeta Oyavo, Lefi Adeya Tia'ava. It's the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs. Then there's Lefi understanding of Olam HaTeva. That's the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Yesodei Torah. That's the Rambam in the end of Hilchos Teshuva. And then there's a third way to really get a glimpse of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You read in Parshas Hazinu, Zechoyim as Olam Binu Shnos Stavim. To learn history, to go back in time, and to study, see what happens. All the different things that have occurred in the world has the Kadosh Baruch Hu's fingerprints on it. Some of it is obvious, some of it is less obvious. Sometimes it takes a long time to understand why a certain thing is true. Some things in history, some force in history, we see in our own eyes. Open up your eyes. I'm talking both in terms of personal history, what happens to you as an individual, and what happens to Klai Yisrael as a whole. If you look back, you know, most of you have only been in history for about 20 years or so. But if you look back at certain things that happened in the last 20 years of your own lives, it's very obvious why certain things happened. How did you end up being here and being there, and why you ended up going to this school? And you may not have understood it, and you know, maybe you met this person and that person, and, you know, like, and all of a sudden, like, the dots start to connect a little bit. But there's so much of your own life that appears to be random. You don't know, like why did that happen this way? Like what was part of Kadosh Baruch Hu's grandiose plan? Multiply that billions of times over by the story of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has been around more than 20 years. 3,000 plus and still going. So many nuances of things have happened in our history. And multiply that by a billion times over, the history of the entire world. So many things have happened in the world. Do we know why they play it out in such a way? So when you study history, sometimes you see cause and effect. Sometimes you understand, you know, it takes many, many years to see, oh, something happened in such and such a way that's going to impact X, Y, and Z. You know, Marshall doesn't know a little bit about what's called modern history, modern in the sense of the 20th century. So the events of World War I were cataclysmic for the whole world, for Klal Yisrael for sure. The only reason why most people in the world don't know too much about World War I is because it's overshadowed by World War II. If there never would have been a World War II, World War I would have had much more time studied and analyzed, because it changed the dynamics of the world and Klal Yisrael to such an extent. Unfortunately, it set up the stage for World War II, which changed the world even more. It doesn't take that much to connect the dots to realize that one of the desired outcomes of World War I, which was probably not even the major outcome at all, at least from the secular point of view, was the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. Turkish Empire. The Turks have basically been running the Middle East for the last couple hundred years, corruptly and unofficially. But Lamaisa, they had been the men in charge. And they didn't leave us much, except a couple of stones on top of the Kosel and a couple of walls around Yerushalayim. If I have my facts right, I think they're right. I think we all the Mishmenes HaKaras HaTov for one other thing. That's the reason why in Eretz Yisrael the cars drive on the normal side of the street. Because you think all the places that were under England, so always drive on the left side of the road. So if cars would have started, if cars wouldn't have started until after 1917, after the British took over, we'd probably in Eretz Yisrael would be backwards like England is. So I think because there were three cars in the country beforehand, so somebody decided to put traffic on the right side. I think that's right. If it's wrong, I'll be happy to be my dilemmas. So it doesn't take that much of a mumchid history to realize that one of the unbelievable results of World War I was that the Ottoman Turk Empire basically disbanded. It was conquered by the British, and the British took over Eretz Yisrael. Now, don't think that was such a party. The British took over Eretz Yisrael. There were a lot of, you know, it was a long, long, hard road until we got to where we are today. But there's no question that it set into motion forces that enabled Klal Yisrael to return to Eretz Yisrael. There's no question about it. So those forces were set into motion back I mean, they were set many, many years before that, but they were precipitated by events that were taking place almost 1,000 miles away. And Kohenu v'Kohena, again, just it's a snip of history. Kohenu v'Kohena, both in terms of personal history and communal history, national history, sometimes the dots are easily connected. And very often they're not. And very often we have no idea. We don't have a clue, not a clue, as to why things are happening the way they are. Wouldn't it have made more sense for the historical forces to work this way? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us the same way he says to us in the rocks. Next time you write a history book, so you do it the way you want to do it. But right now, I'm doing it the way I'm doing it the way I want to do it, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is our attitude towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu an attitude of we don't understand, therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't know what he's doing? Or is it a total and complete spotless, a total and complete statement of recognition, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are in charge of this world. You are the Melech Machi and Lochem of this world. You set the rules of the place. Hein bin yani teva, hein bin yani chachmas haTorah, hein bin yani history. The things I understand, I appreciate. And the things I don't understand, I also appreciate. Because I have a moon of shleim in you that there's ultimately a reason for everything. That's what Kabbalah Simcha Shemaim is all about. And as such, the total Zbatos to Kadosh Baruch Hu sets the stage for the next bracha. The next bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei after Malchus. Once you get this down pat, this is what you should be thinking about for the 10 Pesukim of Malchus. The Chazan is really kvetching out the Nigun, and we'll have some time to think a little bit more. But these are some of the thoughts going through your mind. That sets the stage for Zichronis. Because Zichronis begins when Malchus lets off. Zichronis begins by acknowledging that Rosh Hashanah, because it's Yom Kabbalah Simcha Shemayim, it's a profound Yom HaDin as well. And the Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah is so profound because the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Chochmah is so profound. And that's the entire first text of the Baruch of Zichronis, is that recognition that everything is remembered by Kodesh Baruch Hu. From your most gracious Ad Bias Goyal, all in one shot. There is no time, there is no place, there is no limitation. Ki zecha kol niflo, am follows lefon haba. Ata zeicher, es oylam. E nista minegre necha. There is nothing that is hidden from Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore the degree of din on Rosh Hashanah is so profound, is so awe-inspiring, is so terrifying. It is terrifying because Malchus Shemayim is so terrifying. Well, the question becomes, so where do we go from here? So a person does such a great job in Malchus, to be Kabbal Malchus Shemayim, Gavaldik, and Moridik, well, he's got the whole thing down pat. And now he comes to the Yom HaDin, and now he's shaking. He can't continue davening. He's so scared, he's so frightened. But Emes HaDin, so that wasn't what we wanted to accomplish. We don't want to scare a guy out of shul. So what happened? The Kabbalah Simcha Shemayim is the name of the game. It's the only word that Shmoneh Esrei makim. If you miss Zochrein L'Chaim, the world won't come to an end. You miss, B'Sefer Chaim, Uchsav HaMitzvah. You missed HaMelech HaKodesh, you got to start all the way back again. So Malchus Shemayim is the only thing that's makim in Shmoneh Esrei. So it's so critical to the day, and yet it puts you into such a miserable mood because you're so terrified. What have you accomplished? We say in the Sanat Tekef, Kilo Yisku B'Necha Badin. Malachi Asharis are frightened and terrified by the Emes HaDin of Rosh Hashanah because they know they can't win. It's not going to work. They're not going to succeed. So what do we waste our time for? Just throw your hands up for Hashanah. Listen, I lost anyway. You know, why waste my time? What are we trying to accomplish? So all the Goli Musa have basically the same model, the same mushal. It's always tough to give this mushal, in today's world because it always conjures up political, images and cynicism. But we'll give the marshal anyway, even though we just don't connect it to any human being, politician of today's tkufa, radio tkufa. Every society has its dinim, has its mishpat. A person does crime X, Y, and Z, is convicted, so he can be chaymisa, chaymomus, in jail for the rest of life, a lot of punishment for the crime. Every system that we know of has a certain quirk. It's a very strange thing. It's a bizarre concept, but it exists throughout the world. It's called the system of pardoning. It's an amazing thing that a guy commits murder. He should be in jail for the next 1,000 years. According to Midas Adin, there's no hope. Kilo Yizkel B'Rechem Adin. What happens? King has a good day. King says, you know what? That guy, all right. Give him a pardon. Pardon, the prison door opens. He's free as a bird. Even in America, it's not a monarchy, and somehow that koyach of the monarchies from Europe, somehow it snuck its way into the Constitution also. Somehow entered into the playbook of America also. The president pardons, the governor pardons, Yenim pardons, Shmenim pardons, everyone has a pardon. Okay, so you know, you live in a democratic society, so you have to think a few times before you pardon who you're pardoning, because then, it doesn't look always so good. Okay, so what do you care if people figure it out? But the Ikaron, that principle exists, and theoretically there's no limit to pardons. There's only one thing. You can only have a pardon if the pardoner, if that word is correct, is the melech. If you're not the kabbalim, is the melech, so who is he to pardon? You have to have the koichas amalchus in order to pardon. The greater the pardon, the greater koichas amalchus you need. If you're talking about very heavy-duty, serious crimes, you better be a real, real bona fide, real legit melech to pull such a stunt, turn the prison books overnight. So Bar Nusra will explain, that's what's going on in Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, the minute we open up the bracha of Zichreinus, so we realize that we have no hope. It's just impossible. That Kadosh Baruch Hu created the rocks and created the water and created the stars and created history and created Paraduma, who is so all-knowing and so all-encompassing and so all, and we are nothing and puny and irrelevant to his entire... who are you kidding? Stop before you start. What hope is there for Rosh Hashanah? And it's the same Malchus Shemayim that a minute ago we thought kills it for us is what saves the day. The greater Kabbalah Malchus Shemayim we have, the greater we can expect the Kadosh Baruch Hu to look at us and say, my dear children, my tiny kinder, I'm going to be meichel you. I'm going to pardon you. If you be a sadin, you shouldn't get out. But I'm going to take the whole mishpat, take all of the rules of law, all the midas adin, and toss it out the window, and bar betem Hashem akechem. You have b'nei ha-melech, I give you a pardon. You can only be zeiche to that if you're an eved to the melech. If you're mekabel a malchus shemayim, then you're zeiche b'din. So the two themes that we have in Rosh Hashanah, the theme of malchus and the theme of din, on the one hand, Malchus is such a mechayev that it makes din impossible. On the other hand, the same Malchus is what makes din realistic. And that's the godless of Rosh Hashanah. That the more you makabal Malchus Shemayim, the more terrified you are of Kadosh Baruch Hu, the better you stand in the din, and the more you're able to makabal the Rachmanis of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Those are some of the things you have to think about during the Brachim Zichreinus. These are dinim, zaloch hashir today, basically. Just teaching what are the dinim. Zichron Jua, you have to have these things in mind. Chazal, let's do these brachas. We move on to the next bracha, the bracha of Shofros. What are we supposed to be thinking about during Shofros? Shofros is the most confusing of all the brachas. You know why Shofros is so confusing? Malchus is really very, very simple. Every pasuk says the same thing. Hashem's the melech, Hashem's the melech, Hashem's the melech. Something says Hashem was the melech, he is the melech, will be the melech. Testing your dictum a little bit here and there, but it's the same thing. Every bracha is there, everything is the same. And the one pasuk doesn't say anything about melech, Shema Yisrael, which is also melechus. Zichreinus is the same thing. Every pasuk is Zichreinus is the same thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu remembers the bris, and Nachum remembers the bris, and remembers the bris, and remembers the Yavas, and the Yavas, and the Shvatim, and the bris, and Nachal bris, and Nachal bris, Yizokher, and Yizkor, etc., etc. Let me just say it. Shofros is much more complicated. It's all over the place. Shofros, we take a little bit of a smattering, you know, Let's talk about Kabbalah Torah for a little bit. Learn a little bit about Yisrael. Let's talk about, you know, there's going to be, you talk about Shofar Godol, and Yemos HaMashiach, there's going to be a great Shofar blast. We'll talk about that for a little bit. Now let's go back to Matan Torah a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit about that. You know, when the Nevi'im come, there's always a Shofar Godol, and there's this, you know, we're just kind of free associates. It's kind of like Shir. Like, you know, we're not really learning Taisus, we don't know what we're doing. You know, free association. As long as it has the word shofar and it's good. And even that we break down, because by the time we get to the 10th plus, we ran out of shofar, so we threw out chatzotzos for good luck. Why not? chatzotzos and shofar are totally different. Close enough. Rishonim talked about that, not me. The rush is kasher, not my kasher. What in the world that last pasuk is doing this? So the theme of shofar is complicated, it's confusing, because I'm not really sure what the theme is. Well, what's the common denominator between all these shofars? So the Rav said that what a person has to be focusing on during the Baruch of Shofars, the unifying theme of Shofars is when a Kadosh Baruch Hu appears, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is announced to the Kol Shofar. Ol Kim Yisrua, Sheva Kol Shofar, Hashem Elem Yira, Sheva Gol Yitaka. Whenever there's Ashura Sashchina in this world, it is always goes hand in hand the sound of a shofar. Kadosh Baruch Hu was Masha Shechinosu in the world at different times. He was Masha Shechinosu in the world at Kabbalah Torah. He was Masha Shechinosu in the world through the words of the Nevi'im. He will be Masha Shechinosu in the world. And that's the theme of shofars. That Kadosh Baruch Hu is not just this grandiose melech, someone sitting in Shemayim, separate and distinct from our lives. Kadosh Baruch is not just a zeicher and someone who sits and counts the sands of history and has his grandiose plans, and I have no relationship with him. The Baruch of Shofars is an unbelievable Baruch. This Kadosh Baruch we just spoke about, the one who is in a different league, in a different world, in a different ballpark, in a different mahus, in a different universe, in a different galaxy, the Kadosh Baruch Hu created all of the above, turns to us and says, I want to have a relationship with you. I want to be Masha Shechinah. I want to be your neighbor. That's what Shechinah means. Shechinah means a Shochen. I want to be your neighbor. I want to be near you. I want to hold your hand. Me. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going. Kadosh Baruch Hu is there. I just got finished with Yehoshua Kolobet Malchus and the Chorinus. Me and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, what are we? The best we were able to do was to say that first we said the Baruch Malchus and we said a Kadosh Baruch Hu is so powerful, so everything I'm running away as far as I possibly can. I don't want anyone near a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then Zichronis said to me, yeah, but if you want a pardon, you better, okay, so I'll wait there shaking for the pardon. Come to Baruch of Shai first and talk to some of the language. He said, no. Not only does a Kadosh Baruch Hu Not that the Kadosh Baruch Hu just want to merely pardon you. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants Usruas Melech Bo. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be a friend. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be close with you. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you. And he announces he's coming. He's coming to spend time with you. You can hear his announcement. The king's here. That's called Tekir Shofar. We almost, like 180 degrees, the three brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. We started out in a world of pachad, nerva, oyom, a total isbatlus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not understanding anything about the world, and totally, completely realizing our insignificance in this world. We can't even figure out where there's a rock in a cave somewhere. And that led us to an almost a yush in terms of Ashmir Samitzis is never going to be up to par, and therefore we're just doomed to failure. And all of a sudden we conclude, by the time the Shemoneh Esrei is over, Shemeya kol truas am Yisrael berachamim. Do you think it's just coincidental that the word trua means reus, means friendship? When we say the pasuk truas melech bo, we ask most people when they get to that pasuk, what does truas mean? They think it means true of the shofar. It means it's truas melech bo, it means the reus of the king. It's a play on the word, truas melech bo. We started out the Davin Shemoneh Esrei as far as possible from the Kadosh Baruch Hu. that we end as close as possible to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam, in his Mamash, every word of his Kaddish Kadoshim, Rambam, Rosh Mishnayis, Mesav Rosh Hashanah. But he describes the mood of the Yom Niroim. So the Rambam describes the phenomena of everything we've been talking about. The Rambam writes that Rosh Hashanah and Kippur is a running away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I'm so afraid, with the realization that the only place for me to run is right back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. That's the imagery. That's the model. That's the marshal that the Rambam depicts. That's what the mindset of Rosh Hashanah is all about. So Rabbi say, if the seed, the culmination, the ultimate, the highest level of the three brachas is the end, the Shemeh Kol Tshuva Sabbis HaBarachim, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Mashar Shechinosa in this world and he asks us to be part of his grandiose plan, a plan that we can never understand. We don't have the intellectual kalim. Kadosh Baruch Hu never gave us that ability to understand everything. But he still holds his hand out to us, Kibiyachal, and says, I want you to be part of my plan, and I'm here to spend time with you. How does that express itself? The height of all the brachas is the brachas of Shofar. The brach of Shofar is the Pesuk Shofar that speak primarily about Kabbalah Satara of Har Sinai and conclude with the Shofar Shel Mashiach, which is the same Shofar. It's the same message. Because we said the Rambam signs off different Svarim and Mishneh Torah with the theme to remember. The Rambam signs off all of Mishneh Torah. The end. He just went to Kol Torah Kula. The Rambam writes in the Hakdamah to Mishneh Torah. He's going to tell you every single thing, every single halacha and Tesha that you have to know are all written in this book, 14 volumes. And if you're writing the Rambam and you want to sign off the last line of the book, so the Rambam ends off Sefer Malach, Sefer Shavtzi, Hukhas Malachim with depicting a scene of what Yemasa B'Sheikh is all about. And he says, the ultimate, the final dream of Yemasa B'Sheikh, that why did Chacham and Nevi'im look forward to Yemasa B'Sheikh all these years? What's the dream of Imamin all about? Says the Rambam, because the world in Yemasa B'Sheikh will be a world that will actually be conducive to Yos Pnuyim, Atayra, and Chachmasa. It'll be a world of Kimitzion Tetzaira. It'll be a world of Mola Deas Hashem. It'll be a world we can sit and learn Kunis Asfekas and Mokitzoisim without any distractions. It'll be a world of pure Torah and pure mitzvahs and pure Shashuras Hashchina. That's the world. That's the dream. That's the goal. That's where history is supposed to end up. So the Brach of Shofars, the bracha of the psukim of Matan Torah of Har Sinai, and the shofar of Mashiach is the same shofar. It's the shofar of Shu Pnuyim B'Torah V'Chachmasa. It's not a great surprise that before Tkir Shofar the Kotzke took out a Ktzais. The stomach in that one act that he was trying to express was, I want to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the vehicle in this world. This is the way to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, to Chochmas HaTorah. Connecting in the little bit that we have, as difficult as it is, and as our, we don't have a mashur, not a tikkun b'nayam, with the depth of Chochmas HaTorah, but each person in their own ability, Kadosh Baruch Hu grants us with, to connect to that spring of Chochma, to that Olam HaTorah, to that Hashuras HaShechina. That's how a Jew goes to Tkir Shofar. Okay, so by sight, hopefully Mitzvah Shem will tomorrow go back to learning. Okay, hopefully you have a little bit of the chizuk service to get us back into that.